trigger warning for anybody who's listening to this. We're doing an episode about anime, especially from the 90s, 80s, and early 2000s. So, consent wasn't a thing in half of those. Good evening, Nerd Forensics fans. We are recording from the Snake Road because that was the longest slog of Dragon Ball Z. Other than Goku learns to drive, the one place you want to kill yourself is Snake Road. And of course, we're doing an episode about the OVA and VHS and anime market of the early 90s, late 80s, and the early 2000s. In an episode that we've dubbed Anime Niacs or I Love Boobies.
Millicent Oriana, culture expert. While seeking to unlock the secrets of all fandoms, she is exposed to an overload of every aspect of pop culture. Now, when asked a question about a piece of popular culture, she becomes curious. Now hosting a podcast and joined by amazing guests, she seeks to find answers and find a way to live off her talents and to make a fun podcast.
Ask questions. Who am I to start with? The guy that's in love with his pillow or the dude that has really troubling views on women? Hello, everybody. And if you didn't know earlier, we were talking about anime from the 90s, late 80s, and early 2000s market, or as most kids in America in the 90s called it, the first time they saw boobs. Tonight, I'm joined with Jacob Urban.
Hello.
And my producer, Sophia, is out, so this episode's quality might be a little off, but we're going to try our hardest, okay? I love y'all, and let's hope for the best. So recently, I saw a clip of an OVA called Genocyber, and it was about like this demon that just wanted to kill everybody in a futuristic world, and let's be real. There's a reason that serial killers was synonymous with the anime market in the 80s and 90s in Japan. That was murder porn. That's all it was, is violence porn. And, I mean, that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the horrifying murder, violence, and, you know, sex-laden anime from the day. We're also going to talk about, you know, sometimes the little gems we got, like Ghost in the Shell, Akira, and my personal favorite, X. Then I saw the TV show, and let's be real, that was a much better show than that movie could have ever dreamed of being. So it's kind of funny that I'm bringing that up. All right, so let's start with Elvin Lied. Anybody who's ever seen that knows that that is some of the most violent hoo-ha we've ever seen ever. I actually have only watched the first episode, and I'm pretty aware of it, but Jacob has actually seen all of the episodes, so he can tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the whole thing. I wouldn't say it's gonna be one of my, like, favorite animes, in terms of, like, the story, but the actual animation itself is pretty clean. The level that they go to with the gore in that show is actually kind of amazing, because it's all hand-drawn, I believe.
I'm pretty sure it is, actually. Like, well, at least most of it.
Yeah, most of it is. I think the backgrounds, they did something unique with those.
Yeah, it's like Blue Submarine number 6 era or whatever that was. Blue Sub. You remember that Blue Sub?
No, I don't remember that one.
Yeah, it was like Blue Submarine number 6. It was like a 6-episode OVA about like human beings basically lived on a sub because like weird water creatures. It wasn't good. That's another thing about all these OVAs we're going to be talking about tonight. Most of them are not good.
Oh, I mean, we're going to definitely talk about some gems, but...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the whole thing is, I'm going to try to get Sophia into Dragon Ball Z, and I figured the best way to do that is to show her the world's strongest first.
Yeah, yeah. You can try.
That's an amazing movie. That's like freebasing Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem Dragon Ball Z really has is the fact that, you know, they stretch it out so much.
Oh, yeah, that's why, you know, I really do need to watch Dragon Ball Super and I need to watch Dragon Ball Kai, because I've heard they've actually really fixed that problem.
Yeah.
But, goddamn, if The World's Strongest is not one of my favorite anime movies of all time.
Yeah. No, it's a good one. I mean, especially when you consider the quality of stuff being put out at that time period, it's pretty up there.
A really funny part of that, actually, is that The World's Strongest, I believe, was released on July 7th, 1990, which actually is the day I was born.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was either that or is the Tree of Life. It was one of those two Dragon Ball Z movies.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I'm not exactly certain of when they came out, but, you know, like Dragon Ball came out super early, and that lasted for a long time.
It did. And, I mean, that's the thing. Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, everything based off of Akira Toriyama's Dragon Ball anime is pretty great. And those movies have nothing to do with manga, but, oh, are they not wonderful? Most of them. I mean, I will be real with you all. I haven't seen anything past, I think, Lord Slug, other than Broly. So, you know, I'm a poser. I will admit that, Sine. But we're mostly talking about boobies. And speaking of Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, I was just going to say there weren't really too many boobies in Dragon Ball or Dragon Ball Z.
And yeah, you're right. There weren't too many boobies in Dragon Ball or Dragon Ball Z. And again, this episode is titled I Love Boobies. Because as most American kids from the 90s and 80s, millennials as we're called, can attest, most of us saw our first naked person in anime.
I'm not exactly sure when I saw the first naked person on, like, a movie or TV show, to be honest.
Okay, first naked person for me, I believe, was Ninja Scroll when I was, like, 4. And second naked person who was real naked was, I don't know if I was lucky enough to see Selma Hayek, but whoever got naked in Dust Till Dawn.
Yeah, I honestly don't remember that far back because I've watched a lot of movies and a lot of trash cinema, so.
Oh, yeah, and nobody wants their first memory of a naked person to have anything to do with Harvey Keitel.
Yeah.
Let's be real. So getting back to Ghost in the Shell, I mean, some people will definitely say that was first their first pair of anime boobs.
Yeah, I mean, Ghost in the Shell, beyond that, is just honestly a great anime.
It's an amazing movie. I mean, the whole concept, the fact that it's dealing with struggles with nations and post-war trauma deficits.
You know, where does the consciousness begin and end?
Oh, yeah, those parts too. What does it mean to be a human being? Things like that. I was actually just thinking about all of the international issues and, like, you know, how relations between countries. Ghost in the Shell is all about how Japan is riddled with a refugee crisis.
Yeah. I mean, it has been a minute since I did watch Ghost in the Shell. It's probably been about 3 years since I watched Ghost in the Shell. So I remember the core storyline, but a lot of those, like, other motifs to the movie, I'm going to need some reminding.
So you remember the Puppet Master and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the whole thing is Japan is, like, flooded with refugees from other parts of Asia, China, Vietnam.
Yeah.
And the Puppet Master AI actually came from the United States. It was some United States intelligence project. That was actually the U.S. government that blows Kusanagi apart at the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, so the thing is, the whole movie deals with, like, things like ethnic struggles and refugee crisis. People are, like, complaining about the kind of stuff right now with, like, oh, we can't take the refugees and stuff. And it's like, it'll be like that. And it's like, dude, that's like saying something will be like the Smurfs. It's a fucking cartoon.
Yeah.
It's a cartoon. It's a good cartoon, but it's a fucking cartoon.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, I want to say in the first episode, I said the whole thing about how mythology shapes our morality. And I found out Jordan Peterson believes the exact same thing. And I'm hoping to God nobody thinks that I'm like Jordan Peterson. That was the dumbest thing ever. But the thing is, I still fucking believe it. And that's what I meant when I said, podcasters, we don't know what the fuck we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are things that even if somebody is wrong 95% of the time, that other 5% that they get something right, that doesn't, you know, mean that you're a fan of theirs.
Oh, yeah, and we can't pick our fans. I just want everybody to know, I'm not like Jordan Peterson when I said that. But I will say, Ogami Ito, anybody who's ever seen the Lone Wolf and Cub movies, he shaped more of my morality better than anybody. Him, Kenshiro from Mist of the North Star, and, I don't know, like, Captain America. And the good Cap, not the one that's like, you know, John Walker. The good Cap, Isaiah Bradley. Oh, and Steve Rogers. He's good, too. But we're going to always bring up Isaiah Bradley on this show because we're Isaiah Bradley team.
Yeah, I mean, he's forgotten real easily.
He is forgotten real easy, just like the Tuskegee experiment.
I mean, this is one of those things where, you know, you don't want to think about the terrible stuff that your country's done. And that's why this stuff, you know, gets swept under the rug for the most part.
Oh, yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I look white as shit, but I'm all, like, that's to people of color. White people, I look very ethnically Celt, so they just automatically other me. So, the world's a crazy place. But yeah, so Ghost in the Shell is about a lot of ethnic strife and stuff like that. Things that, you know, hopefully in later stories I write, I can explore. But, you know, it's about refugee crises and stuff. Like, you know, Eric Clapton being like, we can't keep the refugees in England. We've fucked up too many countries and we can't let the people whose countries we've fucked up into our country.
This is one of those things where as long as there are borders, there's going to be refugees. I mean, it's not like I believe that we should have a borderless world to a degree. I don't think humanity is just there yet. It would be nice if we could do that, but we got to be, you know, actually united for something like that to really work. But the world is always going to have problems, like, regardless of human intervention. There's always going to be some sort of flooding or tornadoes or any other global climate catastrophe that's going to happen to us in the next 50 years.
We're always going to try to stay progressive on this show, but we're also going to try to stay very, very real.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. All right, Dr. King talked about all the races coming together, right? So what I want every Negro to do here today is find the nearest white person and give him a hug. Just give him a hug, okay? Nope, sir, you're not being attacked. You're being hugged, okay?
Again, the world will always have problems regardless of whether we have borders or not. The problems are going to be beyond what humans can control. So, in a sense, there will always be people having to leave one area for another. Yeah. Just because they can't live there anymore.
And we could go on to, like, you know, try to fix, like, the problems between Israel and Palestine and everything tonight. And that's what Ghost in the Shell makes you start thinking. So, it's an amazing movie. That's how we're going to finish this. We're not even going to summarize Ghost in the Shell. We're just going to tell people to watch it because, I mean, damn, look at that.
Like, for these animes that, you know, if you haven't seen them, I do want to try to avoid spoilers and, you know, just give the recommendation of you should watch this. It has something to say.
And, I mean, Fist in the Star is very roughly made. It's got a lot of issues and everything. Personally, that is my favorite anime of all time. The manga covers it a lot better and a lot easier. It's a lot quicker of a read. I will say that. And, you know, there's some problems. I don't think there's a single manga that ever not had a racial problem in it.
I mean, I'm sure there's a few, but, you know, it's just different. What one culture would find something questionable, another culture might have no issue with.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've never been to Japan, so I can't tell you any firsthand experience.
But, yeah, when you're watching, like, Cyborg 009, which is trying to be woke, and you have this character from Kenya, and he's drawn with the darky iconography of, like, you know, early American cartoons. It's like, well, I mean, even if the guy was trying to be woke, that's an issue.
Yeah. You should definitely avoid making racial stereotypes when you're designing your characters.
I will say, actually, Watanabe, the guy who made Cowboy Bebop and Samurai Champloo and stuff like that, he definitely did try, at least, because I want to say Samurai Champloo, there's a whole episode where they show the Ainu people.
Yeah.
With, like, an absolute amount of respect. And I've never seen that from another anime.
Mugen? Is that the...
Mugen is actually Ainu, but yeah, he's
a descendant of theirs.
Yeah, and there's an episode where there's like this guy with a crossbow who's also Ainu. And they're actually pretty lovely depictions of them because they depict them, again, as people. You've seen those really old animes where there's always that guy with the kanha ball and the fucking, like, he's wearing a pelt from, like, an animal.
Yep.
That's always supposed to be an Ainu person, and it's like, you're showing a goddamn caveman.
Yeah, no, it's a problem. It's not cool.
It's an absolute issue. So, I mean, that's the thing. I can't think of a lot of animes that don't have issues like that.
And, I mean, some of it is definitely done to be a joke. Like, it's supposed to be, oh, this is horrible. It's supposed to get that, like, I shouldn't be laughing, but I am reaction.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, like, I mean, it's like It's Always Sunny with, like, the Lethal Weapon jokes. And it's like, yeah, I get it. That episode was really trying to demonstrate that nobody even noticed the Native American stereotypes.
Yep.
But the thing is, at the same time, blackface and the, again, like I said, darky iconography from, like, the early cartoons, that's actually a form of violence.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And that's the thing. It's really a hard, ticky-tacky spot. Because, I mean, me. Again, like I said, I'm white. But I have a lot of features of a Celt person. And I actually, I dealt with hair discrimination from my own mother. She was a very French-looking person and everything like that. And she didn't like my eyebrows, the way my hair looked. She didn't like it sitting naturally. And it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, if I saw that shit, I could only imagine what everybody else sees. The people that, like, are obviously, you look at them and say, a black man, a Hispanic woman. Like,
yeah,
it's hard.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a very real issue.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the thing about anime. I just want everybody to know, even though we're doing a whole episode about anime, this isn't the episode about anime where we're going to address all the problems about it, but we do know there are problems.
Yeah, and I mean, well, there's more than just racial problems in anime. There are very problematic themes that extend beyond that a lot of the time.
What are you saying? Rape culture is a problem too?
Yeah, that's in there. You know, also just stereotyping women to be a certain way, or the really disturbing ish involving children, and, you know, they'll say, oh, but it's actually a 1,200-year-old dragon in a human body. You know, it's still, no, that body pillow you have is of a little girl, and you should feel bad.
I mean, as long as you're not hurting anybody, I'm sure nobody is ever gonna, like, condemn you for it completely. But, yeah, you know, don't be proud of it.
Yeah. No, there are issues within a lot of anime. And, I mean, some of this is definitely probably from a Western perspective because, you know, that's just who we are. We're both Americans.
No, I was going to say, you'll see most Japanese people. Most Japanese people look at otaku like they're fucking serial killers.
Yeah. Well, there was the otaku killer, who I don't know if you know about.
I know about him. That other Miyazaki, the one that doesn't make cool video games or anime.
Yeah. Yeah. The other one.
Yeah, I know all about that guy.
So, I mean, you know, that did not help the image of anime.
It did not. And since we're not a true crime podcast, we're going to talk about Outlaw Star. You remember Outlaw Star, right, Jacob?
Vaguely. This is, again, one of those ones I haven't seen in a really long time. It's basically a space western, but the guy has, like, a gun that can shoot spells.
Yeah, that's explained later. It's basically what Firefly was destined to turn into if Firefly hadn't gotten canceled at the first season. I mean, I know there's going to be some nerds out there and be like, Firefly was... No, let's be real. Joss Whedon was watching Outlaw Star and he wrote Firefly. And there's nothing wrong with getting ideas from something that's dead. We can always do that. But we can also always be honest with ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's the saying, there's nothing original under the sun. And yeah, you're going to be influenced. If you're a creator, you're going to be influenced by other creations that you enjoyed.
Oh, yeah. It's like, actually, one of my favorite sayings is, good writers create, but real writers steal.
I mean, it's one of those things where, especially with art, I feel like there is a little bit more leniency into taking something, adapting it, and then trying to improve it. You know, as long as you're not straight up plagiarizing, you're good. Like Star Wars, for example, you know, it has heavy influences of Hidden Fortress in it.
Dune, Flash Gordon, a ton of stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, Star Wars is a pretty great franchise, but to ignore the fact that it was influenced by things that came before it is just, you know...
It's nonsense, but to say it's bad because of that is also nonsense.
Yeah. So, back to Outlaw Star, you know, if Firefly was inspired by it, you know, awesome.
Come on. Spaceship, bounty hunters, girl in a briefcase.
I know all of the parallels.
Yeah.
I didn't even really watch Firefly, so don't think I'm, like, defending it. I don't know too much about Firefly. I was always a Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
Growing up.
He was a Trekkie, and I, again, was into, like, anime and stuff. I will say that from what I know about Star Trek, I've been playing Mass Effect a lot lately, and it's the closest anybody will ever get to a good Star Trek game. Besides Space Quest, but only the really old people are going to know what I'm talking about there.
Star Trek doesn't really even have that many, like, video games.
It does, but they all suck.
Oh, it does? They just all suck?
They all suck.
Oh, well, good to know.
Yeah.
That's probably why I've never heard of them.
Yeah, they all suck. So Outlaw Star, I will definitely say that Twilight Suzuka, Melfina, and Aisha Clan definitely all helped me awaken in a lot of ways. Also, Fred Lowe. I mean, his gay ass wanted to give people some guns for sex. I would have definitely been on board.
What?
Sorry. Bisexual people will totally understand what I'm talking about. They're going to just be like, yeah, every anime character is pretty much there for me to stick things in or have stick in me.
Okay.
But, you know, you just want to do that with some of them.
Well, I mean, I understand that, you know, some people are very attracted to cartoon characters, and I'm not going to judge for that. It's just, you can technically, I think, marry one, but it's odd.
Well, I'm not suggesting that you marry one. I'm just saying that you fuck one.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do it in the real world, but, well, there's getting to this point now where you almost can.
I mean, okay, there's a whole movie about that. So I framed the cartoon's husband for murder, and the cartoon rabbit goes to jail, and then I fuck the redhead.
I always knew I'd get it in Toontown.
Behind you!
Yeah, but that was a different reality than the one we live in. Like, that was a reality where cartoons and humans coexisted. Right now, the cartoon is still a drawing on a page.
This is why there's a market for antidepressants.
No, I get it. Like, I'm not judging or shaming. It's just, somewhere in your mind, you have to know it's not physically possible yet.
Well, you know, it might be one day.
It very well might be one day. Technology is progressing in kind of an alarming rate.
So if anybody wants me for a guinea pig for fucking cartoons in some way, like, you hit me up.
Would that be legal?
I'd be the first person to die fucking a cartoon.
Huh. And die you might. Depends on the cartoon, really.
And sorry if y'all hear a snoring noise. I have a bulldog Dane mix, and he won't stop snoring right now, so he's loud.
And there's no moving him at this point.
Yeah, he's basically made out of lead. Yeah, Outlaw Star, even though we didn't talk about it at all, it's a good series. Spaceships have arms. You'll get turned on.
What more could you want from an anime?
Actually, yeah, what more could you want from an anime? Spaceships have arms. There's a cat girl. You get turned on. Done. What are some other OVAs you watched before coming over, or some other series you watched, or something where you saw some blood and guts and boobs and...
Actually, one of the ones I wanted to talk about doesn't really have any of those elements, but it is still really good. And it's called Paranoia Agent.
And of course, we did not want to miss out on talking about Satoshi Kon. It's been years since I've seen Perfect Blue. I just got done getting a copy of it. And me and Jacob are going to watch it at some point, but we haven't seen it in years, so... We don't want to do anybody a disservice. But we will talk about Paranoia Agent, which, personally, one of my absolute favorite animes.
Yeah, I mean, so it definitely, like, thematically, it is more about repression, depression, guilt, trauma, really just, like, all these horrible, horrible feelings and, you know, just kind of understanding you have to live with it at some point.
Yeah, it's really one of those things that anybody who's ever had, like, trauma or something should see. It's about trauma. And like Silent Hill, it's a great version of that, but, oh, it is absolutely amazing. It's, again, one of the best animes I've ever seen in my life.
It's one of those things where, like visually it's very pleasing as well. Like the actual animation is really clean. They do transition into different styles at points in it. Like it visually it's a very appealing anime, as well as I do find the story to be good. Again, when it comes down to it, it's about acceptance and, you know, moving through these issues that people have.
Yeah, so anybody that needs to cope with something, it's good for them to watch. And again, it's Satoshi Kon. Anybody who's really, really into anime knows that he is a legend.
Oh, yeah. Like, I definitely watch anime, and there are animes that I like, but I was never one of those kids who, like, wore the costumes and stuff like that from the shows, you know? Like, I wasn't ever that big into anime, and, you know, I still definitely know who Satoshi Kon is.
Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm pretty into cosplayers and stuff. This Halloween, I had Daphne and Velma come over for a Halloween party, and that was, well, that was like Christmas. But moving on.
Yeah, you know, again, I don't want it to sound like I was judging anybody. If that's what you're into and it makes you feel good to cosplay, do it. Follow that passion.
Yeah, or find some cosplayers. But remember, that doesn't mean they just want to have sex with you.
No, some people just enjoy the act of it, like the dressing up and being able to be this character for a day.
Yeah, and that goes for furries, that goes for people that are into bondage. I mean, there are ace people that are into BDSM. So for everybody out there, consent is cool. We're doing an episode about anime, and we're still going to say consent is cool.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, a good deal of the animes that I'm going to talk about, there are some, like, assaults that happen.
That's, like, all animes.
Yeah, and, you know, the assaulter is definitely portrayed as a bad person when it happens. Elfen Lied, you know, the first one we were talking about, that has some issues with, like, definitely trigger warning for anybody who's going to watch that show. There is abuse, there is assault, there is a lot of really tough things to get through.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of it is the creator asking themselves, what's the worst thing I can make this character go through?
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, I remember seeing Doom Megalopolis. I think that was the first time I ever saw a penis monster.
Ah, yes. That must be a special moment.
Yeah, I think everybody who's ever seen an anime has seen a penis monster. And if you develop a hentai fetish, you've all seen a penis monster.
Oh, yeah, you've definitely. You don't even have to have a hentai fetish to have seen a penis monster.
But you've seen a penis monster. I think everybody who's ever watched anime has seen a penis monster.
Yes, everybody who has ever watched hentai has seen a penis monster, but not everybody who has seen a penis monster watches hentai.
There you go. And now we know about penis monsters.
Yeah, and a little bit about hentai.
Okay, well, so we've covered penis monsters, we've covered statutory rape, we've covered... Okay, we're doing a pretty good episode about anime so far.
Yeah, you know, again, the medium is great because Japan, as a society, from my understanding, like, once you hit about age 9, you enter an incredibly highly structured life that, you know, because you're going to your middle school and then into high school, and that's going to, or the middle school you even go to determines what high school you're going to be able to go to, and then what high school you go to is going to determine what kind of college you can go to. It's a very structured society, and something I was reading was talking about how the Japanese school system really is designed to try to make you no longer an individual.
Yeah, and that's why it's so hard to buy gasoline in Japan.
Yeah, I'm sure there are other reasons too, but the point that I'm getting at is that's why some of this anime is just so wild, is it is coming from people who they need some kind of escape from what they're dealing with on an everyday basis.
Oh, yeah. They get so stressed out. Again, since they can't even buy gasoline, they make, like, crazy tentacle hentai and stuff. And the United States, we just go shoot up a shopping mall.
Yeah, no, I am not saying that the United States is better.
Oh,
I'm just making this comparison to people who aren't super familiar with, you know, what it's like to be in Japan.
Oh, yeah. I'm just letting everybody in the world know. We are aware of the situation. Like, that's the thing. Like, we're going to say, you know, oh, these people do that. People in Colombia, you know, some of them have sex with donkeys. That's, like, literally a cultural thing in Colombia. But somebody might be like, yeah, well, I fuck a donkey. You guys, like, go shoot up a shopping mall. You guys had the Ku Klux Klan. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about all of that on this show because that shit existed. And as an American, I feel like it's my duty to bring that up as many times as I can.
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't forget your history.
Oh, yeah, and you should definitely bring up the horrible parts.
Yeah, yeah, don't paint over it like, you know, everything has always been great and amazing, because they haven't been for a very large amount of people for a very long time.
Oh, yeah, it's like I watched Godzilla, and I loved, you know, Godzilla's representation of all the people that died in Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the Lucky Dragon number 7, yeah, which was that ship that all those people got irradiated during the Bikini Atoll. And those were good. That Godzilla, though, where they said Godzilla is a reflection of the Japanese Empire and the invasion of Nanking and everything. I remember when I saw that at a local theater here in Albuquerque called The Guild. I remember I threw up the horns like a fucking metal band. And I was like, yeah! Because I was like, I've never seen a Godzilla movie or any Japanese movie bring up that shit.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things that after World War II, like even before, there was some weird stuff, you know, the imperial system and all of that. But after World War II, Japan had a very hard time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they basically, there was like 3 years of good stuff where they had like some Americans that were building a new thing, like based on like really left policies. And then it was like, we're going to put this former imperialist in charge who's backed by the Dulles brothers who want everything to be as fascist as it possibly can so we can beat those commies.
Japan, it had a very long stretch of time that things were not good. And, you know, that shapes what their society turns into.
And by that long stretch of time, it hasn't ended yet. I just want to throw that out there. So anybody who's currently got their pinky caught in that horrible machine out there, we feel for you. We got our pinky in a fucked up machine here, too.
Yeah.
And pretty much everybody in Western Europe and South America and Africa and pretty much everywhere else in the world, we all have our pinky caught in a machine thanks to the British Empire or the United States.
Yeah. I mean, the history that we had, it's going to probably be another 200 years or so before the full ramification of those events have played out. I mean, World War II still has a huge impact on where modern society is.
I mean, look at the Hundred Years' War or whatever it was, the one that happened in Central Europe between the Protestants and the Catholics.
Yeah.
That caused World War II. If you really, really analyze it.
Every major event in, you know, history to one degree, you know, maybe the further back you go, it's more isolated to just either continents or just a group of countries. But it does all connect.
And just like the best animes, we went all the way back to World War One and the Hundred Years' War or whatever it was.
We went before World War One.
And made a huge deal about all that, brought it all up, made it all relevant to our story. Nobody can stop me. Call a Peter Carton, Fist of the Blue Sky, baby. My favorite manga ever.
Ah, yes. You know, there's something so satisfying about a man touching some, like, sticking his finger into another dude's temple and causing his head to blow up.
Oh, yeah. And then also you have that priest. I can't remember his name, but the one that's, like, early Nanto Seiken, who's, like, super communist.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty great. And I definitely need to say that Tetsuo Ohara did us all a favor by making the best Fist of the North Star story when he made that prequel.
I mean, your knowledge on Fist of the North Star and Blue Sky series is a lot greater than mine. I've seen the Fist of the North Star anime. Fist of the Blue Sky, really what I know of it is from what you've told me about it.
No, yeah, and I mean, if you have a chance, read it. I don't think it ever got completely translated into English, but yeah. There's always torrent sites. There's always fan edits.
Which kind of takes us to the back in time to the 90s tape trading circles where people would buy an episode of like Dragon Ball Z and it would come in and it wouldn't be subtitled. So they'd have to ship it out to like this back room in the middle of nowhere where this guy is translating and doing his own subs.
Oh yeah, I'd be like, okay, so this guy at MIT got this Sailor Moon tape where she actually gets naked and nobody can translate it. Well, I got a friend at UT that can
he speaks some Japanese. He can translate it.
We'll send it to this guy at UT, and the guy at UT's like, okay, I translated enough, but I don't know all of it. Wait, I got a friend at Colorado State that can do it, and they send it over to him, and he does it all. And by that point, the tape is so degraded that when it gets sent out, everybody's like, what the fuck is going on this tape?
There was also a really good chance that you would get a different tape back entirely of a different anime.
Oh, yeah, and there's also that thing with the mixtape communities. It's like, okay, well, you know, I'm really, really looking for Galaxy Express 3-9. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, I got it. Are you going to make it worth my while? And it's like, well, what do you want? I want a tape of a man dying.
Yes, there were those tape trading communities, too, that were looking for the most disturbing content they could find. The 90s was such an interesting time, though, just because of that, you know, pre-internet. We do not realize, like, anybody born after 2000 does not realize how spoiled they are with the internet.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, like, there were some things in VHSs and the Sci-Fi Channel, and the 90s really was, like, a weird Wild West of sex and violence.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I think in America that was because everything needed to be extreme.
Yeah, it all needed to be extreme. Pretty soon we're going to do an episode on our show with about Adam X the Extreme, or as I like to call him, the X-Men's Poochie. So let's stay tuned for that, right, guys?
Yeah, sounds good. So sometimes you'll find like stills from Dragon Ball Z where like Vegeta is swearing like a sailor in the subtitles. And yeah, that's because of those like underground dubs or subs that people were doing out of like just the pure passion to do it.
Oh yeah, even if they didn't speak Japanese. I mean, you got to look at like True Romance. Nobody had seen the Street Fighter properly translated at that point. And you had people going to those niche theaters or watching Channel Z or whatever the hell you fucking West Coast people called it, where they would be like going, you know, wah! While they're watching their kung fu movie and they wouldn't even have subtitles.
Yeah, it was just basically, well, I can follow the story enough to guess what's happening.
And people are getting beat up. That's yeah. Good enough.
You know, the Street Fighter especially, just some of the effects they pull in that movie are hilarious and amazing.
Oh, I know. It's like, I mean, I remember when me and you were watching The Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze, and we were like, that's not how you tear a man's throat out. Yeah. You got to look more proud than that.
Yeah, you don't cry about it. You smile.
You smile, and you wait for that motherfucker to come back for revenge in the second movie.
Yep, because they always come back.
They always come back. You got to just finish them off. Remember that, people. If you have somebody who's like a straight killer, finish them off. I mean, don't get me wrong. Most people are fine with just an ass whooping.
Yeah.
Somebody who's following you throughout the whole movie. Somebody who's flying around on a glider, throwing pumpkin bombs at you, screaming. Just kill their ass and make sure they're done with so nobody else gets hurt.
Yeah, well, that's how you lose another Mary Jane.
Yeah, that's how you lose another Mary Jane or your Aunt May.
Yeah.
I mean, geez. And also, anybody who owns a restaurant, nobody besides Spider-Man wants to be yelled at all day. I just want to throw that out there. And I don't even think Spider-Man wants to be yelled at all day, but he still chose that life.
He chose that life.
And also, we all want a bike from Akira.
Well, yeah, which we haven't even touched on Akira yet, so let's dive deep into that one.
Dum, 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 dum. Right?
Yep.
I will say that the manga is it's a lot better. We all know that. But you can't fit that much in a movie.
No, it would have needed to have been at least three movies to even come close to fitting in all the details the manga has.
Yeah, so, you know, if you've seen Akira, you love it. Check out that manga, because it's so good. I mean, when Tetsuo turns into a jet, that will just... I mean, that's a thrilling scene.
Yeah. You know, sticking to just the movie, you know, the animation in it is very impressive, especially with the transformation sequences.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, that's TMS, which... I mean, we're huge Batman TAS fans. We've brought that up in another episode. But again, TMS, Tokyo Movie Studios, Batman the Animated Series, Akira, Animaniacs, I think Muppet Babies, and of course, Little Nemo, the most disjointed movie ever made. And we'll do a whole episode about that, but I'm going to have to research it and stuff because I know Doug Walker did a really good summary of that episode and stuff. But from what I've heard, he's an asshole. So Let me do my own.
Yeah, that's fair. Also, you know, Little Nemo doesn't fit in with today's themes by any means, because this is mostly violence and nudity, which, yeah, Akira has that.
Yeah, it absolutely has that in spades. Boobies, and then the girl just turns into red mush. Boobies, and the girl gets punched in the face.
Like, the last time I watched it, I just started feeling so bad for her, because everything she is going through...
Yeah, Tetsuo's girlfriend really does not, like, deserve
She doesn't any deserve of any of that. No. She deserves nothing that happened to her in that movie. And it is just one, again, what are the worst things I can do to this character? Yeah.
And again, on Nerd Forensics, we are totally a fan of the long-suffering wife just feeding poison to her husband. F is for Family, Vince Vaughn's character, we're all about that.
The wife was poisoning his noodles. Threw up 2 gallons of floor cleanser. Poor bastard smells like he just blew Mr. Clean.
I innocent. No talk English good. I was changing chat a little bit at a time. But tonight I got tired of waiting and poured in the whole bottle. I told you, Sue. I'm a survivor.
Yeah, I mean, you know, get your revenge somehow.
But don't go to jail for it.
Yeah, I would prefer nobody go to jail for revenge.
Because we're pro-women and anti-jail. Burning bad.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. An episode about anime and feminism. It finally happened.
So, another one I did want to bring up real briefly because it... Again, there is some violence, but there isn't, like, any nudity in it, is Serial Experiments Lane.
And you don't seem to understand. A shame you seemed an honest man.
This came out in 98, I believe. Basically, the best description I've found is Serial Experiments Lane is about a middle school girl named Lane who receives an email from a classmate that died. The email explains that the classmate isn't really dead, but rather has merely shed her physical form.
You're saying that this is an anime from the 90s, an OVA, that it was about a middle school girl and it doesn't have her get naked?
That is right. There are scenes of her where she's not wearing clothing, but you can't, like, make out any details of any kind. Okay. Like, she appears one point as, like, a giant. She appears in the sky as a giant at one point, and she's nude.
Oh, well, good. As long as she was a giant.
Yeah, she's, you know, like, 50 stories tall.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, that's the thing. If it's an anime from that series, especially an OVA, all the kids got to get naked. Especially if they turn into giants, because then you make the macrophiles happy too, right?
Yeah. Granted, we're getting off track with this one, because that's not what the show is. This is one of those shows where you watch the first episode and you just go, what the fuck was that?
Oh, I know. That's most anime. I'm just going off on a tangent because, I mean, let's be real. There was a whole creepy anime culture that still goes to this day that, like, yeah. You know, people need to address that, like, you know, it's cool whatever people fantasize about, but this shit gets problematic at points.
Yeah. Like, nobody wants to be on a watch list because of an anime.
Exactly.
Granted, you know, like I said, the show does not focus really on Lane's sexuality, though, in any way. It's what's really interesting about it is that, you know, is when the internet was just starting, and it has its own stand-in for the internet called The Wired, and it's really about that and how online personas can influence your actual persona and, you know, the separation of the two. Like, I'm trying not to get into spoiler territory.
Yeah, but, you know, so you're saying it's from the 90s when the internet first started, and it focuses a lot on computers and the internet and stuff.
What are you doing?
Making a long-distance phone call. Beijing Hotel.
Beijing Access denied.
Yeah, so again, what, like, I just watched it. Like, this is the most recent anime I've watched. So that's kind of why I wanted to talk about it, knowing that we were going to do this episode. It was coincidental that I was watching it at that point, because it is widely considered as one of the better ones people should watch.
Yeah, and I mean, this all started because, like, I was actually saying I want to do an episode called I Love Boobies. And I was thinking about how the first time I ever saw a pair was in that, Ninja Scroll.
Yeah?
I mean, let's be real. Most people who watched anime in the 90s and wound up being trans were like, yeah, anime played a huge part in that.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah, Jacob wouldn't know, but if you know, you know.
And I believe that, I believe you.
Well, yeah, there we go. All right, so, you know, two people in the room were in agreement.
Yeah, I believe you. Now, an anime that does have boobs and extremely graphic violence is Berserk, which I think it's 1997. Now, I was lucky enough to actually watch pretty much the whole series on YouTube. And my God, does it get insane. You know, the main protagonist is Guts, and he's pretty much your prototypical spiky-haired, sad anime boy with a giant sword.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, back in the 90s, we had two different protagonists. We had the big spiky-haired guy, and we also had the very feminine spiky-haired guy who was based very, very much so on the Kabuki Mono, which anybody who's not familiar with that, they were basically a trans samurai class that almost every romantic novel in Japan written for like 300 years about these people. So just throwing that out there.
You know, Japan, again, that was a thing that did happen, and it's such an interesting country because of the way it chooses to express itself.
Well, it's like, okay, so there's an old Chinese poem from like 500 BC where it brings up the something beautiful boy, and it was literally, they were talking about feminine men. So it's kind of interesting, like, with this whole, I gotta do a whole episode about like Asian fucking art in the last like 2,000 years and trans people.
Yeah, and it's just one of those differences between Western and Eastern cultures.
Oh, yeah. Getting back to Berserk, I mean, from what I remember, it's like Mortal Kombat, the TV series, but with swords.
Not particularly. I think you're thinking of something else, because Berserk is mostly like in a medieval Europe setting.
Oh, I was talking about the violence aspect.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because so Guts is part of a mercenary group called the Band of the Hawk. And yeah. It basically, they're like traveling through medieval Europe just being soldiers for hire.
Yeah, and from what I remember in Berserk, it's been like almost 20 years since I've seen Berserk.
Yeah.
From what I remember, a lot of people's insides become outsides.
Yes, they do.
So, again, Mortal Kombat, the series in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah, no, in that sense, yes. One of the things I really do love about Berserk is the big twist, and I don't want to spoil it, so the big twist is pretty amazing because, again, it's basically medieval Europe that they're in, which it's always interesting to see depiction like that kind of iconography in an anime, because most, you know, most animes that take place during that era is feudal Japan.
Yeah, and we're going to accidentally throw out spoilers, but we're never going to intentionally throw them out. The only spoiler we're ever going to intentionally throw out is that Kaiser Sose is actually Bruce Willis.
Yeah, and, you know, that bald guy who was in The Sixth Sense, That was Bruce Willis the whole time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like in The Sixth Sense, you find out that the dude in that hairpiece the whole time, that's Bruce Willis the whole movie.
That's not the twist.
That's not the twist of that movie.
That wasn't the twist?
No.
I'll tell you about it.
And inside Kevin Spacey's box was pictures of him forcing himself on a teenage boy.
In Seven?
Yeah, that was, oh, okay. Was in the box.
I was just trying to make sure you were referencing what I thought you were referencing.
Well, I was referencing Seven and Kevin Spacey's real life.
Yes, yes. I know about what Kevin Spacey did, and I don't agree with rehabilitating him and letting him have a career again. But somebody thinks it's a good idea.
Who's that somebody?
Producers in Hollywood. Like, he's been getting work again.
I say we just make a chimera of, like, every celebrity who screws up. And we do that every 10 years. We just sew celebrities together and screw up. And we're like, we make them into a celebrity monster.
I don't know if we need to go that extreme. Like, if, you know, they do something that's deserving of jail time, they should definitely go to jail.
Well, what if they don't do anything that deserves jail time?
I don't think, if it's something that doesn't deserve jail time, I think sewing them into a chimera is way too extreme.
You don't think that Carlos Mencia, for stealing people's jokes, could have his face sewn to Jeff Dunham's ass for basically being a racist puppet guy, and Jeff Dunham could be sewed to all of his puppets, and then we could also have, like, that person from Knocked Up that wound up being, like, a total transphobe, having her face sewn to Jeff Dunham's face, and then we'd have Steve Harvey's forehead sewn between their faces, and we eventually just create this horrible monster full of huffed up celebrities.
Like I said, I think that's a bit extreme for what these people did for the most part. Like, I don't like Carlos Mencia, but I don't think he should have his face sewn to somebody's ass.
Okay, well, you know,
this is a disagreement in this show.
Yeah, so I mean, unfortunately, this is not like one of those old MSNBC debate shows, so we're not going to go into the ethics of sewing people together. But
look, you know the ethics of it.
Okay, I know it's unethical, but somebody should let me know if they want this to happen, because I mean, I think it should happen. I'm not trying to inspire any nuts. I'm not Alex Jones, but you know, if one of those people gets in a really bad accident, like if Jeff Dunham got in a really bad accident, I really hope the doctor that works on him just thinks it's a good idea to sew him to his puppets.
I'm just going to let you have this fantasy, because there's obviously no talking sense into it. If you think a doctor's going to just be willing to sew a dude to a bunch of puppets.
Well, wouldn't you do that if you were a surgeon and you had to save Jeff Dunham's
But I'm
life?
Not a surgeon, nor will I ever be one.
Yeah, that's why a Hippocratic Oath exists.
Exactly.
I'm sure there's literally a thing that says you won't sew some racist jackass to his puppets.
Yeah. Again, I'm not defending him as a person, but he is still a human being. You know.
I'm sorry. I just watched Face Off, and like, I'm all about skin grafts and unethical science.
Yeah, the idea behind Face Off is definitely unethical to all hell.
And we're definitely going to have to do an episode about Face Off. But let's get back to topic, because we're running a little low on time. Jacob, any more animes you want to talk about?
A personal favorite of mine is Higurashi When They Cry. It is a true horror anime. Now, the difference between, like, modern-day horror movies are more terror movies, where they rely on the jump scare and the you know, that's really what they rely on, is the jump scare and gore, where true horror sticks with you. It is not an in-the-moment panic. It is something that stays in your brain.
I want to say I read about Higurashi When They Cry recently. I think it was when I was reading about Silent Hill or something.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of people, because the show is in arcs, so, like, four episodes make an arc, and, you know, once that arc is done, it's done. And then they'll do, like, another six episodes that are its own arc. And they have a really interesting plot device to be able to pull this off. Again, for the most part, most of the first season is just subverting viewer expectation. People who only get through, like, the first episode or two are kind of like, and it just seemed like a boring slice of life anime. And I was like, no, No, you missed out. Like, it is something you have to pay attention to and you have to watch. And once you get to the actual horror in it, it stays with you. The original run of the series was like 3 seasons, and it was popular enough to actually come back in 2020, I think, is when they renewed it. So it got another 2 seasons that are like a completely different story arc. And again, it's pretty good, but the original came out, I think, in 2007. So to come back after 12 years of not being on the air.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Gintama is one I haven't watched a lot of, but I've liked quite a bit. So, I mean, if we're going to talk about personal favorites because we're wrapping it up, I'm actually going to have to throw my hat into the... I watched... I'm sure a lot of people have watched Full Metal Alchemist, and it was okay. Brotherhood, though? That's a good series. I mean, when it started getting into, like, the coup and, like, all the intrigue and the fact that it got more about, like, the rebellion and overthrowing the old government and stuff, that show got pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you watch the original Zoid series, which, I mean, that's, you know, a little childish. You watch the original Zoid series and you're like, yeah, they're competing in a tournament and stuff. And then you watch that second series they made. You're like, oh, they're like fighting in a war and it's like 600 years before the original series. And like, that's some cool ish.
Yeah, no, it definitely is.
That was pretty great. So we're going to definitely do more episodes about anime, but we just kind of wanted to do an episode where we just talked about anime from like the early 2000s, 90s, and 80s.
And, you know, before we get out of here, if you watch all of these animes, you're going to be like really mentally messed up for a while. So I was going to offer a couple palate cleansers out there. Generally just fun stuff to watch that will make you feel pretty good. There's 4 I want to bring up. You know, One Punch Man is probably my favorite just because of how much it makes fun of the shonen genre in general. It's hilarious. It's a very dry sense of humor. It's absolutely hilarious. There's Nichi Jou, which is NICHI'JOU. Basically, absurdist schoolgirl slice of life comedy. You know, there's an 8-year-old scientist that makes a robot woman that has a giant key in her back, and it makes her life horrible because she can't lay down or sit in a chair properly. And she did it because it was cute. That's why the scientist put it in there. And her limbs are constantly just detaching. Yeah, her life is horrible, but she loves the little girl.
Sounds like when me and you were watching the 3rd season of American Horror Story, and we were watching Sexy McSexy. I can't remember his name right now. The one that played Quicksilver in the X-Men movie.
Oh, Evan Peters.
Evan Peters. We were watching Evan Peters bashing his head against the wall because they Frankenstein him back to life. And you were like, well, yeah, that's why you don't bring a person back to life.
Yeah. You especially don't Frankenstein someone back to life.
It's kind of what it reminds me of, because it sounds like the kind of same kind of thing where you're just like sitting there trying to stick a shotgun in your mouth.
Again, it's an absurdist comedy, so, you know, if you were to put real world logic into it, yeah, it's a horrifying existence she has, but, you know, it's all played for laughs, and she, again, she's happy for the most part. She just wishes she didn't have the key in her back.
That sounds great. I mean, I'm kind of old school, so I think Excel Saga was the last, like, really funny anime I watched besides Gintama.
I do want to bring up Haven't You Heard I'm Sakamoto. Again, kind of a slice of life, takes place in a high school, and Sakamoto is the greatest at everything. Like, there's no problem he can't come across that he can't just solve.
I watched that, actually. That one's pretty good. That's the one with the guy that's just like, he's so cool,
yeah,
right? And he has the glasses.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, I watched that one.
No, it's amazing.
Okay.
Sakamoto, what's the matter? What happened to your desk?
I'll be fine right here. Anyway, Teach, please begin the lesson.
That one's tight.
It's an amazing show. It's hilarious.
I like that one a lot.
And then my personal favorite comedy that I've seen is Asobi Asobase. Asobi Asobe. Again, slice of life. It's about 3 high school girls that just have, like, they make a pastime club for high school, and they're just basically playing like different games all the time, but it's absolutely insane. In one episode, to get control of the room to have their club in, they're going up against another school club, and they're trying to see who can kick their shoe the farthest. And, the one girl, she climbs up a 20-foot, 20 steps or something, jumps off, and, she kicks her shoe really hard, but it just goes straight up in the air. And she, really messes herself up. She's in a full body cast the rest of the series.
Oh, my God. Sounds like you watched a little bit of Excel Saga, right?
A little bit.
You remember Poor Pedro?
Yep.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that.
And then it ends in an absolute banger because it's just the voice actresses singing a death metal song.
Always good. I mean, personally, I'm into death metal and black metal and everything. I mean, Hunter Hendrix is my god, as well as Agretsuko.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you have a special place in your heart for Japanese death metal, the ending theme is really good.
Oh, yeah. And for me, from the palate cleansers I'm going to list, I mean, I'm going to be old school with most of it. So the first one I'm going to mention, of course, is going to be the newest. Cells at Work. I'm a big biology nerd, so... Oh,
Cells at Work was really good.
Yeah, so I'm pretty into, the body and stuff, so I really liked that episode. Or that show. Otherwise, I would have to say it is nothing like the original anime from everything I've heard, but I have a fondness for Samurai Pizza Cats because of the fact that they literally lost the scripts.
Yep.
And they just dubbed it without any of the translations, so it's insanity. And otherwise, the third palate cleanser that I'm definitely going to recommend to everybody is Lupin the Third. I'm going to recommend Lupin the Third to everybody. And if you never see the series, you just don't have time, you just don't want to start at the beginning, whatever, watch Castle of Caligaristo. It's Hayao Miyazaki's first film, and it's wonderful. It is my absolute favorite anime of all time.
Yeah, that one is a really good one.
And with that, we're going to just wrap it up for the episode. We're going to tell everybody, watch some great anime. Let's talk about more anime. We're going to definitely do more episodes about anime, but we just wanted to do this episode because we're millennials and we had to do a love letter to this whole market. And we didn't bring up Pokemon once, so I think we might have set some sort of record.
No boobs in Pokemon.
No boobs in Pokemon. Good night, everybody. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me, you can always reach me at my Patreon and you can give me money. You can give me gifts. You can do a lot of stuff. I will probably add my Amazon wish list because I want somebody to buy me off with gifts like I was a prostitute. Like one of those high class ones, sexy toothless Julia Roberts. You can also reach me at nerdforensics@gmail.com. You can reach me on my Twitter at CampPodMillie, and that's Camp with a K. You can also reach me at Facebook at nerdforensics at Facebook. And of course, Jacob can be reached at...
You can find me on Twitter at CactusJake505. I'm not really on it too much, but if people start following me, I'll post stuff.
Yeah. And if you want to send him death threats or anything, you can also do that on nerdforensics.
Yeah. It happens. Basically, the one thing I know is you don't read the comments.
Yeah, just, don't send us any explosives. We really are not equipped for explosives right now.